Hi there, and a warm welcome to what is the 267th edition of DF Direct Weekly, our weekly show discussing the latest gaming and technology news. And man, we've got a lot to get through this week owing to the Summer Game Fest. The fest being probably the worst, my least favourite word in the English language. Anyway, first of all, joining you on the panel, Oliver McKenzie, hello.
Yes, Rich, it's not the Jeffs, it's Key 3 that we're celebrating today. And I actually think it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, I agree. It was a very, very strong showing, which is kind of what we need at the moment. Right, John Linneman?
Yes, I was super happy with this show. There was a lot of great stuff that really excited me. And for the first time ever on what's essentially like a faux E3 stage, we got a brand new Sega Master System game announced. And I can't wait to hear Rich talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, I will talk about it. first of all, we actually got some reaction here from supporter K-Back. I have not and will not ever refer to Summer Game Fest as quote-unquote Key 3, as that would indicate some degree of parity with E3 in terms of its influence in the history of the video game landscape. Summer Game Fest is a pale imitation of the mighty E3, and Jeff Keighley is an incredibly poor ambassador for this industry.
What?
That's pretty mean. Tell you what, there's a level where I agree with that, and that is that not having like a full show means that you kind of get what you're given. You can't really dig out your own stories anymore. I think, you know, there's something to be said for having an industry get together, which is a proper event rather than, you know, a bunch of stuff that's kind of piped down to you via the internet. You know, Jeff has his play days and stuff, still not quite the same. The incredibly poor ambassador, I mean, I think he does sort of monopolize this sort of events role at the moment. But man, we could do a lot worse than Jeff Keighley at this point. I think he's doing a pretty good job, and he does respond to feedback. I think that's the other thing. I think he sort of understands the audience sentiment to his shows and does genuinely try to improve them. But yeah, well, I think we're going to sort of bear that out with positive commentary throughout this particular segment. But let's just crack on with our first sort of breakout game. Okay, so where should we begin with this? Let's begin by going to the very end of Summer Game Fest 2026 and talk about Final Fantasy VII Revelation. The end of the trilogy is in sight. It's going to be coming out day and date on every single supported platform, which is a first for Final Fantasy VII remakes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to you first on this one, John. Curious what you make of it.
Yeah, so it's nice to actually see them reaching the end. It's been a long journey. You remember this whole thing was announced 12 years ago, E3 2015. So
wow,
that's actually, you know, that's a long time. But considering they switched developers early on and the initial release came out in 2020, I mean, given modern development times, it's not too bad. They're doing okay in terms of getting this done. But it is a gigantic time and money investment for a remake, and I suspect they won't ever want to do something like this again. But this looks cool. I mean, it looks like they've essentially continued to build off their technology that they've done with Unreal Engine 4, which makes perfect sense, right? No reason to re-architect anything at this point. They've got a solid foundation that they built with the last game. This looks cool. I like that they're bringing back the job system, but it's like, you know, it's still the action-based combat, but we'll see how that all comes together. I did think that Rebirth, while very good, was quote unquote too much in some ways. And I'm curious to see how they can tie all this together in a satisfying way. And I hope they kind of funnel it back down. Like, I know it's still got this kind of open map stuff as expected, but I hope it really moves into a nice conclusion at the end. I do like how they have the Zelda, I guess, and now Crimson Desert-y kind of stuff where you're jumping from a high point and skydiving down to the ground. I thought that was a fun addition here. But beyond that, I mean, it looks good, and it just looks like a continuation of what they've done with Rebirth, and their cinematography and character model work especially remains like absolutely top tier. And I feel like we're looking kind of at a shining example of older Unreal technology at its best, right? Like, this is kind of like really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Oliver, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, I do appreciate the fact that they've been so efficient with this production, because I think Rebirth itself was a three-year production because they had Integrate before Rebirth, and they were working on Integrate, the whole studio apparently, large portions of it were working on Integrate. Then they were working on Rebirth, and now Revelation, only 3 years later, seemingly only 3 years later, just about, at least according to their scheduled release date. Now, those things can slip, of course, but it's very impressive. And not only that, it's launching not just on the preeminent PlayStation platform of the time, but on Switch and Xbox and PC. Very impressive to do basically four whole platforms for launch. And yeah, part of that necessitated sticking with UE4. And whether that's the right call or the wrong call, certainly in terms of production efficiency, it's the right call. In terms of the graphical techniques that we're seeing here, it does look pretty similar to Rebirth, for good and for bad. Obviously, those cinematics look incredible, look amazing. Some of the environments also look quite fetching. Obviously, they have tons of polygons around. They're using mesh shaders. They're doing all kinds of crazy things, I am sure. But the lighting technology, you know, the GI can look good in some shots. In other shots, it doesn't quite hold up quite as well. Not seeing any evidence of any particular new technologies here. Not that would be expected, but like, you know, the reflections still appear to be SSR, shadow maps, et cetera, et cetera. Don't need to go through that whole song and dance. But what's new here is that you're able to fly over the map, apparently, on the airship, on the Highwind. That's pretty cool. Now, in this trailer, I was a little bit confused because in the trailer, they basically show a sequence, a cinematic sequence, where you're skydiving from the Highwind onto ground, and then it appears to almost fade or transition to a shot where you're coming down, but you're very close to the ground. Now, actually, I've read some commentary from the developers in this and listened to the video a little bit more closely, and it does sound like it is going to be something where it's like a seamless, basically a seamless transition between going in the sky, being in the sky, and going to the ground. There's going to be kind of a seamless falling sequence, apparently. So it is not going to just be something like Starfield, where you just had like a cinematic kind of showing you what's going on, but you didn't actually get to control it. In this case, you actually do get to control it. But outside of that, I think the main technical focus for this title is probably just getting the game to run across all these platforms, shipping day and date. I'm sure they have a lot of experience working for the other two titles, shipping on Xbox and Switch, but it's obviously a pretty impressive technical accomplishment to get this kind of cruddy old UE4 running on Switch 2, running pretty well with Rebirth, and I'm sure it will be probably a comparable experience with Revelation here on the Switch 2 and on other low-powered PC hardware.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not seeing like radical improvements in technology here, are we? I mean, obviously, we've got sort of new elements that are being added game by game, and I find that quite interesting, but I also think it makes for a more cohesive trilogy as such. It kind of works as a sort of fully coherent piece visually. It doesn't look like super, super jarring moving from one game to the next. So I think if you are in the future looking to like move through all of these games one at a time, there's that continuity there. I also think it speaks to the quality of the artwork, where it does look great. Right. I mean, you can see where the technological limitations are, possibly because of Unreal Engine 4 still being the technological focus. But the artistry and character models, especially, and the imagination in what they're doing here, it holds up. Right. I'm kind of reminded of, you know, classic games from prior generations. When they get remastered, they just, you know, still look great. And it's not really sort of technologically related. It's just down to the quality of those core assets. Yeah, what do you think, John?
I mean, yeah, it's just it's a showcase of artistry. And I've been in the background kind of working on beginning a video on Batman Arkham Knight, actually, sort of a retrospective. And I feel like, in a way, it's a similar situation, right, where they're leveraging existing technology that's been around for a bit, but in very smart ways. And you look at Arkham Knight and you realize from a technical standpoint, the limitations are clear. But it's in the artistry, the VFX work, like very specific things with the camera work and like the way they handle just rendering out those scenes. It's all very driven by just like this vision that they have for it. And I feel like that's kind of what we've been seeing with Final Fantasy as well, especially in the cutscenes. I mean, it's true. Like, if you nitpick Rebirth, there's plenty of issues out in the world in terms of limitations. But I think overall, it's a very nice looking series of games. And I think they've done a really nice job here at sort of producing this in a reasonably timely fashion, given the scope here. So it's an interesting lesson. And I thought about this. I've been thinking about this recently about, like, you see a lot of this discussion about, you know, X game from 10 years ago looks so good. Why are games today looking worse? And and I'm trying to I don't necessarily agree, but I'm trying to understand the sentiment of what it is that makes people say that. And I think this is an example of a game that is leveraging older technologies in a very smart way and eking out really good performance from it. Right. So, yeah, I think they're making the right choices here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to the next game that caught our eye. So we're actually going to go right back to the beginning of Summer Game Fest. We had the reveal of Resident Evil Veronica, John, which I guess is a remake of Resident Evil Code Veronica, the classic Dreamcast exclusive.
Indeed, and this is a very special release, I think, because it's the one sort of... So this was originally developed as a collaborative effort between a company called Nextech and Capcom, right? Nextech did the heavy lifting. They actually did the Saturn port of Resident Evil 1, if I recall. So they had okay. this like Sega connection, right? But it turned out to be kind of like, it was the first like big, like non-numbered Resident Evil, not counting stuff like Gun Survivor or whatnot, but it was like a proper Resident Evil game, but it was for Dreamcast. And it always kind of stood out as a slightly different side thing, even though the story is very much connected to the rest of the series. And I, you know, they've been remaking Resident Evil for so long, and I really wanted to see what they did with it, because one of the reasons why Resident Evil's remakes, I think, are so effective is that they are, in many ways, very different games, right? They right. take the themes and the core of what they're remaking and doing something new with it. And that's exciting. And you see that right away with this introduction sequence, right? Because you're like dropped into France within the first person. And when I was on the stream, we all kind of theorized right away, like, wait a minute, this has got to be RE Engine. Like, it just has that characteristic RE Engine look, the hair, the lighting. It's a very nice look, but it's very specific to that engine. And then it's like, wait a minute, Paris. That's where the introduction FMV was set in Code Veronica. Originally, it was a non-playable CGI sequence of Claire essentially infiltrating and trying to escape from an umbrella lab in Europe. And then she's captured and dropped into that island, right? So putting that together, you're like, wait, this is like telling that side, that part of the story. So presumably this will follow Claire as she goes to Europe, and you will actually get to infiltrate this lab now and take part in that sequence, which was not in the original game at all outside of the FMV, which I think is super, super cool and shows exactly what I'm talking about when they're like, I just love the way Capcom approaches remakes. Like, they do it better than just about anyone else. And it's been that way forever. I mean, Resident Evil 1's remake is still a legendary game, right? Mm-hmm. And they've kept up that quality each time. So I don't consider this as like, oh, I've already played this game. This is a new game that's based on themes of an older game, is essentially mm-hmm. the way I would look at it. And, you know, aside from that, again, similar to Final Fantasy, they've done this thing where they've really dialed in their technology. This time, their in-house technology, being the RE engine. And they've essentially figured out how to make games in a reasonable amount of time with a very specific but very high fidelity that look and run, most importantly, very, very well. And Capcom is one of those... one of the developers of this generation that I think is doing better than most companies making games today. They've got good employee retainment. They're making games at a regular clip. They're making games in all sorts of genres and franchises. They're doing both new IP like Pragmata, but also, you know, digging into their very popular IP. Like, we're not going to get into it here, but there was also Monster Hunter Wilds DLC, which I thought felt like a really nice response to the very drab looking original release of Monster Hunter Wilds with those blue skies. And it's just, I'm just really happy to see Capcom continue to sort of deliver in this way. So yeah, great, great stuff here. But I'm curious about your take, Oliver, because as well, you're also into these.
I do find that kind of shared idea there interesting between the Final Fantasy games, the Final Fantasy VII Remake series, and these RE Engine games, because Capcom has been quite prodigious with pumping them out, and no detriment to their apparent quality and no detriment to their apparent visual quality, because they are pushing really high-end features in these games. And indeed, in this trailer, I'm seeing you know, evidence possibly of like ray trace shadows, because you get that super fine shadow presentation up close on like the cigarettes and little items on the table, and they become more diffuse as they grow closer to the light source there as well, which I think is a really cool touch. And obviously these RE Engine games do tend to look quite superb, I'd have to say. There's no compromise whatsoever in their visual presentation, for sure. I did note one weird thing. I'm not quite sure if people picked up on this, but like the character's French accent in that trailer, the woman's, I'm not sure, did not quite place that as French necessarily.
I picked that up too. That didn't sound right at all.
Didn't quite sound right. It sounded more like, you know, French with like some moments that almost sounded like English or German inflected, like not quite correct to my ears.
It's very strange. It's like, yeah, me speaking French.
John is more familiar with French accents than I am, so I defer to him on all things French accent fidelity related. But no, I've not played Code Veronica at all, so I'm not totally familiar with what's going up here. But it wasn't over the it was an isometric game, isn't that right? It was an isometric.
No. So on Dreamcast, the reason this was a big deal visually was that it was the first Resident Evil with fully real-time 3D backgrounds. It did have fixed camera angles, but the camera angles could now move, whereas on PlayStation, everything was like pre-renders. This was the time they're like, all right, we're doing fully 3D this time. And it was like,
I see,
a revelation, if you will.
Yeah, so isometric but full 3D. Okay, that's interesting, because I was actually wondering from this trailer, I don't know if this is a hint or if this is just a bit of a cinematic choice, but it's presented from the first person primarily, right?
My guess is that they're going to be like Requiem and offer
where first and switch.
Third person options, right? Because I think they've developed two audiences with that, right? Mm-hmm. And they've kind of realized like, wait, like, you know, the first person stuff is cool. A lot of people latched onto it, but a lot of people don't like it and or get motion sickness in the case of a friend of mine. So like having the third person view as well basically allows you to sort of dial in your experience. And I actually did take advantage of this in Requiem. I played through Grace in first person. It just felt right given the size, the type of environment that was. Mm-hmm. And then for the rest of the game, you know, the Leon stuff, at least I back to third person just as they thought, even though the option was there from the beginning. So I suspect it'll be the same here.
Yeah, that's certainly the way that it was designed. And there was that interesting kind of split in the kinds of content in those sections that really made that make sense. I don't know if they would have something like that here. Probably not. But it's an interesting way to cater to both those audiences without having to develop multiple games under kind of multiple different kind of gameplay styles necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff. I mean, what can I say? Capcom have had a stellar 2026. And if we're going to see that sort of momentum move forward into 2027, that's going to be fantastic. You know, it's just a bit of a breath of fresh air, really, to see such a wide range of different games, proprietary technology that looks great and plays great. I also noted, I don't think it's related to the Summer Game Fest as such, but Capcom has delivered a quote-unquote developer message video on the Monster Hunter YouTube channel where they're saying that Monster Hunter Wilds is currently in development for Nintendo Switch 2.
Right.
Which is very, very interesting, I think. Right, John?
Yeah, and I'd heard rumors before that they had been trying this and were struggling to get this done. But it's cool that they seemingly have overcome those challenges and they're able to get the additional performance out of the engine necessary and out of the game, in fact, to actually port it. Because I believe, you know, when it originally shipped, the game was very unoptimized, I would say. Mm-hmm. It did not run well on consoles. It was definitely a step below most RE Engine games in that regard. But it has improved. And I suspect that improvement and refinement to the game, plus their increased familiarity with Switch 2, is making it now possible. And I think that's really good for the game because they have been trying to sort of like overhaul it. So I think many would agree that it was initially not that well received. There was some issues with it, but they've been working hard to sort of like take what they have and make something better out of it and sort of win back those fans. And I think bringing it to Switch 2 will definitely help contribute to that. So that, I think that's really cool.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Stellar Blade Blood Rain, a big sequel there. Again, it's going to be coming to all platforms. Interesting stuff there. I'd say first impressions visually for this game were like off the charts. It just looks so detail rich and beautiful, I think. It was the PC version. It does look as though it was actually using frame generation. There is some evidence of that in the trailer. I guess that doesn't really matter. It's very, very early on in development at this point. It was the PC version. Oliver, I'm going to go to you first on this one. What do you think about this?
Well, I found this quite fetching. I have to assume this is using Unreal 5 based on the studio's pedigree and based off of a couple of graphical techniques in here. It almost looks a little bit Lumine-y to my eyes. And obviously, right. You know, the reflections look quite high fidelity and it definitely has that Unreal look to it, I'd have to say. But yeah, I'm not too familiar with this game or this series. It does look quite fetching. It almost reminds me of the 2021 game, The Ascent. In terms of its depiction of kind of a cyberpunk cityscape, and obviously having it at this high level of fidelity and having it rendered within Unreal, there are some interesting parallels there. But yeah, I would actually be very curious to hear John's thoughts on this game, because you quite enjoyed the original, and I think you also covered it when it was released for PS5 Pro, I believe, which had quite an interesting PSSR implementation and an interesting approach to frame rate caps and things like that. I wonder if they'd take similar steps here, or if they'd try something maybe a little bit more conventional.
Yeah, this trailer, it really intrigued me. Like, the very specific visual style they go through the cities is very appealing in the sense it's like this, like, kind of mix of like old and new, but to create this, like, very messy. It kind of reminds me of some of the stuff that Rocksteady did in Batman Arkham Knight, actually, step and play in that. You know what I mean? Where it's like a cyberpunk, more modern take on like an old, worn out city. And I really like this, like, sort of indirect overcast lighting they have going on. It's very striking. It's not like super contrasty, but it looks somehow very realistic. I think it's just there's a lot going on in this that's very, very promising. And I'm curious to see where they go, because I was a big fan of the original. It was an awesome character action game with a really unique vibe. And this has a different vibe. I mean, I when you hear the music and you see the vending machine, I was like, wait, this got to be Stellar Blade 2. And it was. My only concern is that I did see they put out some key art that has evidence of Gen AI all over it, which made me a little bit worried, and I hope that doesn't bleed too much into the game. But at least this piece they showed here in this trailer is appealing, and I do like the new sort of like hand-to-hand based combat they're showing, which is a change of pace, but potentially very, very cool. It looks fast, it's beautiful, and I hope it turns out good, because, yeah, I am a big fan of that original.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just looks really, really good. I really want to see the console versions at this point, because the detail on display here. I guess when you switch away from, like, the opening sections into the gameplay, it becomes a lot more kind of plausible looking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a shot early on where you show the main character, like, toying around with this like vial in her hand, and the rendering there of her glove in that vial is so good. Like, if you said no, that's the CGI, I would believe you. I don't know, there's something about it that seems almost too good, but I'm very curious to see like if they actually pull off this level. But as you noted, like, this, there is this thing that makes you think, oh, they're using frame gen, but not in a great way, because the frame rate has this very kind of like wobbly look to it. But again, none of that actually matters here. This is just like early in development PC footage of all things. Like, no commentary on that. It's just something that we, you know, kind of looked at and wondered about, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there does seem to be a really strong presence of Far Eastern developers. I mean, Blood Message earlier on in the presentation, again, kind of almost moved into that kind of too good to be true category. There does seem to be like a sort of direction of travel of like, Far Eastern developers, Unreal Engine, some really impressive results. I guess we just have to wait to see the final games to see whether that promise is delivered there. But certainly curious. I mean, obviously, Shift Up really delivered with the initial Stellar Blade.
I agree. It's interesting you mentioned that. There was a lot of these types of games here. There was another one that caught my eye. It was called Aeon 2, which had a really strong look as well. But there is something to all these trailers where they almost look too good. And you're wondering, like, what's actually real? What are they actually delivering? Especially because the gameplay sequences, while they still look great, look less great than the other stuff. So I want to see what they can deliver, right? Like, that's really, I'm excited by what I'm seeing. I have some mild skepticism, but want to see it nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to our next game. And, well, we're going to take a swift departure from the typical AAA fair. We had an announcement that Cuphead is returning. This was a particularly impressive game back in the day, just in terms of its stylization. You could run it on pretty much everything, owing to the visual style there. And we had an announcement via a puppet. And as Jeff said, he really likes his puppets. John, you love Cuphead. We actually had two game announcements here, one for the Master System.
Yes. So the Cuphead 2 announcement, if you will, was literally just an announcement. Like, hey, we're working on this, right?
Yep. Which,
hey, that's mm-hmm. great. But it's the second one that really kind of caught my eye, and I didn't fully understand it when I first saw it. Basically, it's like an 8-bit looking side-scrolling game. Really beautiful pixel art. Like, I really like what they're doing with it. But to be fair, these are kind of a dime a dozen to a degree. Like, I really appreciate the good ones, and I think they can deliver, but there's a lot of them, right? So it's tough to stand out in this field. But there are sometimes games that are being made for old consoles, but it's usually like 16-bit machines or at best the NES, right? So after the show, they reveal that this is all programmed in assembly for the Sega Master System. Like, my interest went way up because that introduces a level of challenge to this that makes it way more interesting to see what they can pull off. Because I feel like the graphics here are super good. It looks very feasible on Master System, but it's a step above pretty much everything else on there. So I will definitely purchase the cartridge version of this when it ships. I think it's amazing that we got a Master System announcement at a show like this. That has never happened. When E3 was first founded, the Master System was long dead in the US. There was nothing that was going to ever be announced for the Master System at a show like this. And I know Rich loves the Master System. It is the master of evil. So how do you feel knowing that Jeff got a Master System game on stage?
Well, you know, I'm actually delighted because I personally feel that the Master System should have a redemption moment.
Oh,
for the childhood trauma that it caused me. So, you know, if there is some sort of healing experience that can be delivered here, I'm all for it.
But okay, then I have another question here. And this is, you know, for our younger colleague here, Oliver. Do you know what the Master System is?
The Sega Master System? Oh, geez, I've heard of it. I couldn't draw it on a map. I couldn't point it out on a map, if that's what you're asking. One of Sega's 8-bit consoles, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you can find full details in Dr. Henry Jones' Grail Diary. This is quite fascinating because it is to the point where, you know, the Master System is kind of like this mythical box to Oliver. It's just not really a thing.
To give you a quick lesson there, it was an 8-bit system, but it wasn't very successful in many parts of the world. It basically failed in the US. It failed somewhat in Japan. It was like the Mark III or something there. It served as the backbone for creating the Game Gear. It was very similar, pretty much the same hardware. But it did find success in Europe, and later it found gigantic success in Brazil. And it kind of became famous for that, like Tectoy and the Master System. And, of course, then the Mega Drive after that. It's a gigantic thing in Brazil. So it was a huge success there. They found a lot of success with it. But if you're in North America, there's a very good chance that you will have never heard of it or played it or care at all.
Do you think the Cuphead developers are targeting the Brazilian audience?
There is a chance of that. I think the game will be good enough that, I mean, it's going to release on modern platforms, right, as well. So, like, they're just banking on that. But I think they just wanted to make it extra authentic. And the Master System's a unique target that we're not seeing a lot of developers go for. So to have a studio like that tackle the Master System of all things, it speaks both to like the hardcore people that still like relish this original hardware, but then it'll also like introduce people that have no idea about it to this idea of this other 8-bit system in a way that I think is kind of interesting. So I hope they pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on. So, Now, let's talk about Alien Isolation 2. The original Alien Isolation came out 2014, I believe. So we're getting a sequel now, 12 years later. Very special game, the original, in its time. John, sequel well overdue. What did you make of the reveal?
So they teased this some months ago, and I was excited. So to make it clear, I absolutely love the original. It was one of my favorite games of the last generation, and I think it's one of the best-looking games of that generation. I think you look at Alien Isolation today, and it's you could release that original game on a modern platform, and it would hold up beautifully. It is still absolutely gorgeous. The material work they did on that, the VFX stuff, top tier. It's definitely one of those like forever titles, like an Uncharted 4 or an Arkham Knight, right? I think it belongs directly with them. But I wasn't sure how successful it was. And famously, IGN reviewed it and gave it a 5.9. It's one of the worst reviews I've ever read. And I don't normally get bothered by reviews, but that one really annoyed me because I just felt like the reviewer just didn't. They didn't know what they were talking about or understand it. But you know what?
Right.
Whatever. Water under the bridge. I sometimes dislike popular things too. Not that this was necessarily popular, but, you know, I'm happy that they have all these years later found a way to make a new one. They've been given the chance. Sega's back here again, allowing Creative Assembly to tackle this concept once again. And it does seem to be more aliens, if you will, as you've got now actually like a planet side sort of thing here instead of just taking place within a starship as in the original. So I'm very curious to see what they do with that. And yeah, I'm just excited. And I would love it if they, it's hard to gauge from this short teaser, right? But I would love it if they've continued to use their own engine, but it's hard to say from just this little teaser.
Yeah. Oliver, what do you think?
Well, I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but Creative Assembly was hiring for candidates with Unreal Engine 5 experience. So I have to presume this is UE5. Actually, when I look through this list of games we've assembled, I mean, I was remarking this a little bit earlier, but I think like almost all of them are Unreal Engine 5. Just a handful are on their own engines or on Unity or something like that. I mean, it really is quite overwhelming the extent to which games are being homogenized into this all-powerful, singular engine, which is a good thing in some instances. Like, I think this trailer looks fantastic, but it's obviously, you know, can be a negative in some other aspects. Yeah, this does seem a bit broader than the original game. I'm not sure if I would call it Aliens, because Aliens was, you know, famously that plural. Many, many aliens, very action-focused.
True, true.
This seems like one alien, but in a broader environment, and still very much a survival horror game. Good when point. You're not expected to dispatch them, necessarily, in grand fashion. But yeah, this does seem cool, you know? Interesting stuff. Looks very pretty, coming to all current generation platforms, including Switch 2. So that's intriguing. That's like one of a small handful of like high profile UE5 titles that are announced for Switch 2 that will presumably be using the engine with all its trimmings. So hopefully that medium lumen setting is ready for showtime, because it'll have to be exercised, I would presume, in this game if they want a good visual result, right? So I'm really looking forward to this one and what it means. There's no release date announced yet, unfortunately, so it might be some ways off. This is more of a teaser trailer, I would say, than anything too substantial. But I think a teaser trailer is all you really need with Alien Isolation, because you kind of know what the deal is, and I think people are plenty excited for this title.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, let's move on. And a very interesting presentation here from a game called Gen Atlas, which is the latest game from Fumito Ueda, obviously the visionary genius behind Ico, Shadow of the Colossus, The Last Guardian, etc. It is Unreal Engine, just to get that out of the way first of all. But John, I don't think the visual signature of Ueda's games have been lost. I don't know what you think.
Certainly not. So this for me was probably the most exciting announcement of the whole show. As someone with a long history with that series, you know, I remember playing the demo back in the summer of 2001. I bought it on day one alongside Silent Hill 2, which those both came out on the same day, by the way, Ico and Silent Hill 2. Very cool. But each one of his games, not only are they very strong in terms of visual design, storytelling, they always prioritize like a new interesting mechanic, right? like, obviously Eco itself was sort of like a take on, it's like that, a bit of an In Another World, Prince of Persia-ish sort of like slower navigational game, but with a, you know, a partner twist to it. There's a reason why he's often called the Eric Chahi of Japan in that regard. And this one seems to be taking some new ideas as well. It's this large, strange robot that you seem to have control over. So it sort of, again, builds on this idea. Some of the ideas we saw Forge and Shadow of the Colossus and The Last Guardian, where you have a small mobile character that can deftly climb around on large structures, including large moving objects. And that's always been this something I appreciate, is this obsession with allowing the character to interact with huge physics-driven objects, right? Like, doing that on PS2 was nuts with Shadow of the Colossus. And this looks really interesting. And it looks like it, you know, it's not going to have that complaint that The Last Guardian have, where, you know, The Last Guardian, the creature was very much an animal, right? And he behaved like an animal, which could sometimes make certain areas a little frustrating, because they did make him behave very much like an unpredictable creature. But this, obviously, with a robot, we get some Rock'em Sock'em robots action in here. I don't know. I was thinking this is like Eco meets Voltron or something. That's kind of the vibe it got for me. But in terms of them using Unreal Engine, you know, for a smaller kind of studio like this, and this is where Unreal makes perfect sense, as it opens the door to a lot of like advanced rendering features and technologies and ease of development, and also better for hiring. That can really help make this possible, right? I don't expect studios like this to be able to make their own in-house technology while also pushing visuals at this level. It's just not realistic anymore, by and large. So I'm okay with that direction in this case. And the aesthetic is maintained. It still looks very unique. I'm super excited for this.
Oliver, what's your take based on what you saw in the trailer there?
Oh, I think it's quite handsome, and it has, you know, very a lot of content that's very suited to Unreal Engine, although I'm sure more modern versions of the engine would fare just fine. But, you know, this is depicting that classic kind of stony, rocky, sandy area that UE5 tends to excel with. Not to say that they made that choice on the basis of the engine, of course, I don't think they did. But also, they aren't availing themselves of frame generation too much, because there are some moments where there's some rocky performance. But again, this is like very pre-release stuff. Would not want to make that judgment. And I'm actually happy to see footage of games that is somewhat realistic and is clearly being rendered in real time for some of these trailers. But yeah, it looks very stark, very much steeped in solitude, like some of UEDA's other titles, like Eco, like Shadow of the Colossus. I think this is quite fetching, but I'm curious to see more about it. It's a fairly enigmatic trailer. It does not really show you a ton from the game, but kind of like with Alien Isolation, I don't really think you need to see that much to get a vibe for what the game is going to be about and what it's likely to feel like when you're playing it.
I will say, though, that the one thing, so 12 years ago, when Final Fantasy VII Remake was unveiled, we also got the official re-reveal of The Last Guardian, right? So right. I guess this show's only missing Shenmue, right, to be complete. But I guess it's sad to me to see this as essentially it's an Epic published game. And I'm not saying it being Epic or multi-platform is sad. I'm just saying I'm sad to see that this feels like a game that Sony would no longer be interested in supporting and publishing. Right. Like, all of his previous works were Sony first party published works. And I know The Last Guardian development must have been horrendously difficult, and I understand that, but I still feel like I would have loved to see them continue to support him as a creator and allow something like this to come out under the Sony Computer Entertainment brand. But hey, you know, Epic picked it up. Fair play to them. They did Alan Wake 2 as well. So it's not necessarily that they even force Unreal Engine on their developers either. So hats off to Epic for supporting this and making this happen. And I can't wait to play it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, The Last Guardian, you know, we had it running at pretty much locked 60 frames per second on PlayStation 5 via using the 1.0 disc code, right? And yep. You couldn't complete the game with that disc code. I believe there was a bug in there that was patched. So, you know, it just seemed to me that this was like such an obvious omission to actually get a really good version of The Last Guardian out there, because it just didn't run well on PlayStation 5 and Pro and PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 4 Pro. But PlayStation 5 could have fixed all of that. It's just a massive missed opportunity there. The Epic publisher side of things, fine, except I guess this means similar to Alan Wake 2, we won't see it on Steam, which is. A bit of a problem. I'd like to say, though, that this was one of the few trailers that actually had full disclosure about what it was that we were actually seeing, which I think is really, really important. That's something that Sony has been typically very good at, something that Microsoft is getting better at. But in the Keighley shows, you never quite know what it is that you're looking at. But, you know, moving that aside, the game just looked very, very interesting. And I think it was a great teaser. You saw enough in there to see the pedigree of the developer. You saw that the visual style of the developer is still there and still looks absolutely fantastic, running on a modern engine. And I'm really looking forward to seeing more. Let's move on now. We're going to sort of have a bit more of a general discussion about some of the other games that we saw. Let's talk about Clutch, first of all. Again, Unreal Engine 5, but again, interesting developer heritage there. Maverick Games are essentially a breakoff group from Playground Games. They left. They wanted to do their own thing after doing Forza Horizon 5. And we had a teaser earlier in the week, and we had more of a trailer in Summer Game Fest. I've got no doubt that this game is going to look fantastic based on the pedigree of the developer. However, you know, it still seemed very kind of, I mean, I'm not sure how much of it was actually gameplay, you know, and that's kind of a bit of a key thing for me. What do you think, Oliver?
Well, yeah, I think the provenance of this footage is a little bit unclear in some elements. I mean, it looks like cinematic footage, maybe gameplay captured from a cinematic camera in some cases. But yeah, it's not totally clear where this is coming from. It does look amazing, like probably the best looking racing game I've ever seen by some margin. You know, it's very much Unreal, but it looks fantastic. You have the metahumans in there. You have great, I mean, brilliant lighting. The cars look outstanding. I'd love to see the races and not just cinematic shots. But yeah, if this is what they're showing off, I mean, it really does beggar belief almost. It looks terrific. And yeah, it does sound like the studio is a lot of ex-Playground people, a lot of ex-Codemasters people as well, where all that talent has gone, because obviously, you know, Codemasters has shed some staff over the years. But I'm certainly glad to see they've landed in a place where they can deliver a really terrific product, it looks like. And this is open world, which is kind of, you know, for racing games, I'm kind of into it. I like the whole concept of open world racing games. I think they tend to work out well, and I think the Forza titles have shown that's a really, really proven concept there. But this is UE5, open world racer, at this level of fidelity. I've never seen anything like it done. So I'm really curious to see how this lands, especially on consoles, mid-spec hardware. Can they pull off? Can they do 60 FPS? Who knows? Really interested to see how that goes. But yeah, this looks extraordinary. And I'm not normally into story-based racers. Like, I do like Grid Legends, but I skip through the story segments for the most part. I'm not too interested in them. But this looks like a properly told, like, almost Hollywood-level cinematic story with, like, well-known actors like Peter Serafinowicz and people like that involved. So it does look like if you're going to make a story-based racer, this is probably the way to do it. And not kind of like these hokey interstitials that don't really tell a personal story. This seems very personal. It seems very Hollywood, and it looks incredibly impressive. So I'm super excited for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think something that sort of stood out to me, I think they've been at this for like 3 years, and 3 years based on the quality of what we're seeing here seems like a relatively short amount of time based on the quality of what we're seeing, and also the kind of ambitions that they're talking about for this game. I'd love to know more about it. I guess we'll have to quote unquote reach out to the developers here to find out more. But in terms of the presentations that we've seen so far, John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Oliver kind of basically nailed everything that I'm thinking there. I think it looks amazing. It's very appealing. I like the idea of story-based racers, but they've not usually executed well. Like I love the concept of Need for Speed the Run back in the day, but they didn't fully pull that off. Mm-hmm. But this actually looks like they might be able to do it, and I really hope they can. And I think it's a specific subset of the genre that I think I've wanted to see tackled, because, you know, franchises like Fast and Furious, very popular, right? But we haven't really seen anybody attempt to do that within a game in this way. And I'm not saying it's the same story or anything. I'm just saying, like, that sort of approach, like putting drama of humans in combination with racing and cars. And I think it could work. And above all that, I'm just happy to see, like, between this, Star Wars Galactic Racer, you know, Forza Horizon continues. Like, it feels like the what happened with the British racing scene is, like, sort of recovering, because there's a lot of legendary developers working in that space. And there was so many studios making great stuff, and it feels like they all got shut down, except for Playground. So,
and Codemasters, to be fair, the guys doing F1, but they are doing F1.
That's true. They're still around, but Codemasters used to do a lot more, right?
Yeah.
And now they're just like, nope, just pure F1. So I am pretty happy to see that we have this coming, and I really hope they can pull it off. So very promising.
Okay, another game that caught our attention that looks absolutely fantastic. It's the debut offering from a new developer, That's No Moon. A lot of highly talented developers there. We had Jacob Minkoff on stage for one of the presentational parts of this, and, you know, fine heritage there, Naughty Dog, et cetera, lots of great games. This one could well be another string to his bow. Yes, it's Unreal Engine 5, but John, we were seeing some pretty impressive stuff here. Amazing character rendering. I thought the animation, the sort of dynamic animation that they're using there, was also standout.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of what they're doing conceptually, but I will say it reminded me of a sort of like military sci-fi set on like an actual planet version of like what I remember when we first saw the Callisto Protocol. Right. You know what I mean? Where it has this, it's like Callisto, it has this focus on like extreme granular detail and really, really advanced character rendering. And I feel like when you just look at every scene, like it's really supremely detailed looking. Every edge looks perfect, which is really, really impressive. And the animation system, of course, is absolutely superb. I guess I just don't know what to make of like the theme and what they're doing with the game just yet. But it does at least seem to have enough of a sci-fi bend that I'm interested, because at first I was like, wait, is this like third person Call of Duty stuff? But it does seem to be more than that. And given the pedigree and the quality of the visuals on display, naturally we're going to look at this. And this is actually, so of all the Unreal Engine 5 games we've seen to date, this feels like this is like getting close and in the direction of like something like Matrix Awakens in terms of like, right, the fidelity, right? Like it actually does seem to compete with that at a fidelity point, which I think is very cool to see. And we haven't seen that many games really push the engine in that specific way yet, right? So obviously we'll keep an eye on it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I love the way this looks. I mean, that animation system, it's really extraordinary because the characters are kind of navigating the environment procedurally with realistic foot and hand placement over uneven terrain, totally uneven terrain, rocks, slopes, all over the place. It's super cool. They say that's part of their dynamic cover system with like cover volumes, which I'm less certain about because it's not like a binary on-off. It's more like, well, you might right. be in cover here, you might be in cover there. We're going to kind of calculate it and do it properly, which I think works for some games. Like for first-person games, it works because if you can't see me, if I can't see you, you can't see me. That's a good heuristic to use. But here, it's going to be harder to judge that from a third-person camera perspective. So I'm curious to see how that works in the end. Story-wise, it does start out quite grounded, but then suggests something bigger, which could be good, could be bad, but it definitely does seem to be more centered around like a personal relationship, personal conflicts, less like this kind of fantasy globe-trotting Call of Duty thing where the world is in peril. It does not seem like that, at least not initially, which is a good change of pace, good way to differentiate this title. Apparently a lot of the developers here come from prestige names like Naughty Dog, and it does seem like a prestige game. Technically, this is UE5, obviously, but it's UE5 at a level of fidelity that is like super impressive, wildly impressive. Always happy to see an engine pushed in these kinds of directions and this hard. But one thing that did kind of scratch and itch here and did kind of send me a little bit of Googling is that the game is called Crossfire. Now, yeah. I covered a game called Crossfire or Crossfire X a few years ago, I think in 2022 for Xbox. There's this Crossfire X game, and it had a single player component developed by Remedy. Now they've shut that game down. You can't play it anymore. Not the single player component, not any part of it. But that was developed by Remedy, at least the single player portion of it. And it was running on Northlight. And this game is also a Crossfire universe game, but very distinct from that effort. But it is in the Crossfire family of IP. So that's like a version of Counter-Strike, basically very similar to Counter-Strike. But yeah, this does seem like more of a prestige game, and the kind of choices of studios that they're partnering with to kind of sell this IP to Western audiences is interesting, because they seem to be going for like these really high budget, interesting kind of prestige experiences or prestige titles. And that's an interesting way to try to make your IP more mainstream in the West. But I think it will pay off for them big time here, because this looks really, really cool. I'm just a little bit not 100% sold on the dynamic cover system, because I've kind of seen similar concepts in other games, and I find that like the binary button in cover, button out of cover tends to work really well. Maybe this would be a little bit more simulation-like and not quite as intuitive, but we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, a couple of notes for me. I did actually have a pre-Summer Game Fest presentation from the developers.
Oh, nice. Like
a virtual press briefing, and I was blown away by what I saw, similar to what you guys saw in this trailer. There is much to be excited about here. I guess, you know, the animation side of things really caught my eye, and just the overall fidelity. Animation, I'm curious about latency, because, you know, pretty much every single game where we've seen major strides in realistic animation has had some sort of latency penalty. So I'm curious to see how they're handling this here. So we had this presentation. It was like, you know, a really compelling presentation. Basically, if you could imagine like a half an hour version of what you saw, and we saw some gameplay as well, which, you know, doesn't disappoint. We can't really talk too much about that, but and then they announced the name, and it's like Crossfire, and it's like, yes, it is a part of the IP developed by Smilegate Entertainment. And I was exactly like you, Olive. It's like, whoa, hold on a minute here. You know, Remedy's already done a Crossfire game. And it's kind of like, it almost seems, you know, bearing in mind what I know of Crossfire, it's kind of like, this seems like a bit of a tenuous link. But ultimately, I don't really care if the game looks like this and hopefully plays as well as it looks. And the other thing I think, which was came across in Summer Game Fest, but kind of amplified by an order of magnitude in the presentation I had, is that these guys are really pumped for it. They're up for it. They are like super, super invested in producing something exceptionally special. And this is a great first start, a great first start in sort of showcasing what they're up to. And yeah, really looking forward to seeing more.
Dude, that's so weird, though. I didn't actually realize, connect the dots, that it was related to the Crossfire, the Korean-developed Crossfire. Because that's like a gigantic game in Asia, like hugely popular. Like, it's just crazy how big that is. And I guess it makes sense then to like do this. It's just weird to have a developer like this tackle this topic. I don't know. The thing about Crossfire that always stood out to me is that it was originally built on the same engine as Fear.
Right.
Lithtech's, it was like Lithtech Jupiter or something, or Jupiter EX or something.
Right.
But it's that same technology that was used to make the original Fear back in 2005. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. We've got to talk about Virtua Fighter Crossroads. This is our first proper look, I guess, at the actual game. And John, I mean, obviously, again, Unreal Engine 5, we knew that. Virtua Fighter Crossroads, the trailer plays out, and it's completely different to any kind of preconception you may have had about a Virtua Fighter game. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
So this was actually kind of interesting and unexpected, but I think I like it. So Virtua Fighter as a series, it was traditionally developed by Sega AM2, RGG Studios taking this one over. And those games are very serious and awesome fighting games, and they are focused purely on that. But it's true. When you look at a modern era, I don't think you can just release a fighting game that just has like arcade mode, versus mode, etc., and actually find big success, right? So clearly they needed to find a way to introduce this to a new audience and bring it back. Namco has done this with Tekken, because they, since the PS1 era, they have always filled their games with just so much stuff, like different modes, content, just lots of cool stuff to go in there. DOA kept people busy with like the frankly absurd amounts of DLC. Capcom's been adding stuff to their fighting games. And of course, Mortal Kombat, they figured out this whole storytelling thing with Mortal Kombat 9 and have continued down that path. Sega seems to be taking that approach as well. And while Namco has also tried some story stuff in Tekken, I can't say they didn't pull it off that well, per se. And I like Mortal Kombat, but, you know, again, there's some limitations there. But RGG Studios' storytelling chops are among the best in the industry, I think. Like, they really know how to direct scenes and, like, make, like, cool dramatic moments, which makes me think they might really be able to do something super cool with this. So the question I have then is, if we have this really interesting story-driven Virtua Fighter experience, which, by the way, wasn't that the original goal of Shenmue? To make like a story-driven Virtua Fighter game? I think it was.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. I dimly recall it was even called Virtua Fighter RPG.
Right.
At least that was how the press described it.
So I feel like that's what they wanted to do back then, and it ended up becoming kind of its own thing. And here, we're seeing that then. But the question is, though, will it have the normal versus fighting part of it? Like, can it still offer what Virtua Fighter fans want? I think yes, like Tekken does, for instance. But I'll be curious to see how that, what actually goes on there and how people respond to this. But there definitely seems to be, unlike, say, Mortal Kombat, more gameplay to it. There's like free running segments and other stuff happening that makes me think it's not just going to be pure fighting during the story mode, at least. And in fact, the brawling looks a little bit more, it's like Final Fight Streetwise, or dare I say, The Bouncer, but done better. I don't know. It really got my attention. I'm very, very curious to see how this turns out and what they do with it. Because I'm
very curious to see whether the actual sort of DNA of Virtua Fighter survives accurately presented. You know, the whole sort of concept of why this series is so beloved by a certain fan base there. I'm not seeing it here, but maybe it is in there. You just can't really tell because, you know, maybe the scope of the game is just much larger than we initially thought. But this is certainly one way to make an impact. Oliver.
Yeah, I mean, compare this to the original Virtua Fighter in, you know, 1993. There's a world of graphical improvements since then. But obviously, even relative to more series entries, recent series entries, it's quite different, both in technology and scope, gameplay, possibly styles. It's a very interesting title. And yeah, this is an interesting game because it is unreal, does seem to be unreal. And I didn't really get that from anything but just looking at it. I kind of clocked it that way because you look around, you see the shadows, you see the indirect lighting, the way that things pool, you see the way that reflections are cast off objects. There's a certain kind of technical makeup of a game like this. And nowadays it's often safe to just say that any sufficiently advanced looking game is unreal, because that's almost invariably the case, especially if you know that it's not RE Engine, or you know that it's not like, you know, a handful of engines, Snowdrop, maybe there are a handful of engines that can even operate in that sphere. And yeah, this does seem to be unreal. But I mean, hey, if they're using it to make a really exciting cinematic game that is realistic like this, that is has some open elements to it like this, I don't really think you could do this credibly on very many engines these days. So I think it's a good choice. But yeah, this looks intriguing. I'm very curious, like you mentioned, very curious to see how they integrate the traditional Virtual Fighter experience into this, and indeed how much of an emphasis will there be on the story mode, when I think people who play Virtual Fighter are mostly not really interested in a single player brawling experience. They're interested in playing it online with their friends. I mean, I'd have to presume at least that's the audience for Virtual Fighter games that I've seen, or like going to, you know, historically going to an arcade or something, playing these games, coin-oping it. So I would be very curious to see how meaty that story is and how long it is and how much effort they put into it, because this seems like an interesting kind of side path for fighting games that isn't often taken.
Okay, good stuff. So let's move on. Let's rattle through our remaining highlights of Summer Game Fest 2026. And John,
talk. Yeah, to me. I mean, let me go through a few of these. So there's almost too many games there, and most things look great, right? Hex caught my interest because it actually, or however you say it, it has, first of all, they're actually tackling the sort of like natural Nordic landscapes, which is something we don't often see. And it's got a really nice vibe to it. But then they couple it with this sort of like surrealistic brutalist architecture, a little bit reminiscent of Remedy's Control, because that also did a lot of like bending and moving of this stuff. But I don't know. I don't know enough about the game to say whether it'll be interesting, but I really, really, really love the visual style. So I wanted to mention that. Then of course, Got to give a shout out to Star Wars Galactic Racer. That's still looking phenomenal. I cannot wait to play it. That's part of the whole.
It's better than ever, I think.
Yeah, that trailer
was so much better than the last one, which in itself was awesome.
Yeah, it's looking awesome. I really cannot wait to check that out. I played the prologue for 1666 Amsterdam, which has long been in development from the original, the father of Assassin's Creed, Patrice. I think he was also the guy behind Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, and everything, right? So, and he's finally. I didn't think this was ever going to be made, and it's looking promising, and I like where they're going with it. And I always felt like he had a purity in his vision for Assassin's Creed that was kind of squandered over time. And maybe for the right, you know, Assassin's Creed was not perfect by any means, but I respect how it stuck to its guns to do something very specific. And it still feels different from every other Assassin's Creed that would follow. So we'll see what he does with this. Star Wars Zero Company is another one that caught my interest because it's like X-Firaxis folk, and also Respawn is somehow involved. But it's basically like Star Wars XCOM, which, hey, I'm in that. I'm all about that. then Hot Wheels Infinite Rush, which basically looks like Burnout Paradise, but Hot Wheels. And this is done by Milestone, who I recently featured in a video on the channel covering Screamer.
Of course.
Which is the oldest running like Italian studio, I think, that's still in business today. And they've, you know, it's the same studio that made Screamer back in the early 90s. Right. And they're still around, still doing racing games, and they got a new Hot Wheels game. So I think that's really cool. I know a lot of people were very excited about Guild Wars 3, but the logo looks like Chud Wars 3, which is, you know, maybe they got to work on the typeface there a little bit. And, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff here. I mean, there's Mortal Shell 2, which would get Tom excited. There's a beta right now, so we need Tom to cover that. There's a new Turtles game, The Last Ronin. I think it's been around for a while. That's being done by Platinum, so I hope that actually turns out. And stuff like that, right? So it's all good looking. But it's after the show, and I think Oliver also wants to talk about this. We randomly got a trailer from Playtonic. There's a new ukulele game, and it's called Super Ukulele Kart, and they are doing a kart racer. And now the thing about this, though, is like, given their heritage, you would expect them to do a basic Diddy Kong Racing, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I kind of would have imagined. Like, hey, you know, they're going to do their own ukulele version of Diddy Kong Racing, but they have not done that. Instead, they're embracing kind of a take on the old sprite-based Super Mario Karts, but with its own flair, and it looks awesome. Like, Oliver, I've been talking here, so, like, why don't you jump in? Because you're a fellow arcade and kart racing fanatic.
Yeah, I'm quite fond of them, and this does remind me a lot of Super Mario Kart, or, like, something like Super
Wacky Mario Wheels,
Super Circuit, or Konami Scooty Crazy kart. Racers. Lots of games out there. A lot of Mode 7 formally, or Mode 7 style racers are aped in this title. It's got a lot of Mode 7 conventions. Like, you've got that very flat road surface that also has the coins and question blocks on it, right? So those aren't separated from the road surface. They're on it. Trees are 2D billboards that face the player at all times. And the characters aren't sprites, but they have kind of limited animation that makes it look like they're cycling through a sprite sheet or something. And they got this kind of pixelated shader effect going on, which looks really cool as well. But in almost like an HD 2D kind of vibe style, they've got some modern rendering in the mix as well. Like, you've got SSR, which is cool. You've got shadow mapping. Again, not terribly novel techniques, but when applied to this kind of style of game, it makes them pop a little bit. And depth of field, and I think it's quite cool. I'm very fond of Mode 7 racers, even though, you know, in some cases they haven't aged the best. I think, like, polygonal racing games, polygons really suit racing games. Unlike, you know, you go back to platformers, and 2D platformers have often aged really well. I think Mode 7 racing games, some of them are quite good, but they are a bit of an acquired taste. So it's kind of fun to see a developer go back and ape the conventions of Mode 7, because I think it's awesome. I think it's really cool. And it makes for an interesting kind of retro aesthetic that, honestly, I've not really seen in a racing game before. I've seen people try to emulate, like, PS1 era racing titles, early 3D, seen lots of fully 2D racing, isometric racing, things like that. But Mode 7 HD 2D, you know, I could be into that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
A simultaneous 8-player split screen. That would be interesting.
Yeah, the 8-player split screen. So we've seen that Night Dive stuff, and M2 did it with the Virtua Racing port, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's only something you could probably get away with a visual style like this, because otherwise it would just be too busy. I don't know what to say about this, except to say this one is going to live or die based on the quality of the gameplay, right? That's the bottom line. They've really got to nail that Super Mario Kart feel, I think, in order to really make an impact on this one. But, you know, these guys, the pedigree, they know what they're doing, right?
Yeah, I still maintain, I know this is controversial to say it, I think Ukulele in the Impossible Lair is like the best Donkey Kong Country game. It's extremely well done. And there's still stuff in there that I think is so interesting and we've not really seen again. Like the way they handle the world map is super compelling. Levels are great. The two states, man, what a great game. Absolutely loved it. Hope they can pull it off here too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's what we think about Summer Game Fest 2026. I mean, hats off to Jeff, I think, for actually delivering a show that could keep us sufficiently interested for two whole hours.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, just generally that there's just been a sort of trend of like, I don't know, we're obviously still within this particular console generation, but it finally feels as though, I don't know, that we're kind of like properly into this generation in a way that perhaps we haven't been before. Okay, well, that was the final topic. Therefore, the end of the show. Please do like, subscribe, share if you enjoyed it. Ring bells for notifications, that sort of stuff. Patreon.com/digitalfoundry. Support us in what we do. High quality video downloads of everything we do. High quality ad-free video downloads, in actual fact. Ad-free website. Early access to DF Direct. Whole bunch of stuff there. But that's all from us on this one. Thanks for watching and supporting DF Digital Foundry even. We'll see you next time.